Fantastic.
Well, hello, welcome everyone. I feel like I know that video by heart now because I've seen it 100 times. But it has a nice jam to it, so I kind of like it. My name is Aaron Williams. I head up advocacy for Mesosphere. Very excited to be here this afternoon to talk about running containers at scale and also how that affects and works with an implementation of DevOps. Really happy to have Stathi Tulumas here with me as well. You may remember him from the keynote. He was the superstar at the keynote. He's going to be actually showing a demo, and I want to get to that as quickly as I can because I think the most interesting part of this might be showing you how this is done, not just talking about sort of the theory of it, but really showing it in practice. But to get us set up for that, I want to start by talking a little bit about the theory so you understand where Mesosphere comes from, what our perspective is on DevOps. So as I said, I'm Aaron Williams. My background includes time at Sun Microsystems and SAP, so I've spent time at large companies. I've also led startups, so I was CEO of two startups in Silicon Valley. And I'll let Stathi introduce himself as well.
Thanks, Aaron. Stathi Tulumas. I've been in tech for what feels like a substantial amount of time. Previous to Mesosphere, I actually spent some time at Chef. I spearheaded several DevOps initiatives in the central region of the U.S., where I was born and raised in Chicago. About a year ago, I moved to the Bay Area, and I got my start relatively early in tech, always starting out with open source technology, leveraging open source technology, actually starting a couple businesses with my brother. So it's always been near and dear to my heart.
Great, so I love to start with this quote from Satya. It was so nice to have him join us here this week. And the reason I start with this quote is because it helps to remind us why DevOps is such an important opportunity for us. Software within IT is becoming more of a competitive weapon. It's not just about having IT as a cost center or having it as a service within your organization. Instead, now, software has become a way that you can compete against other companies in your industry. Take a look at Uber. Take a look at Netflix. These are examples of companies that have completely disrupted the industry that they're part of because their software is better than their competitors. And I think that important realization is what makes us so excited about DevOps and the transformation that's happening in the industry today. So as we go through this and think about what this transition means, I'm going to refer back to this as one of the driving factors in why it's so important and why it can become so valuable for your organization.
Cool. Do you want me to continue or jump to the demo?
What'd you say?
Did you want me to continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is really the history of where we've come from. If you start out on the left, of course, there used to be these giant single computer mainframes. We were able to break that up into multiple computers and put them into a cluster. And then we got to virtual machines and started putting containers on top of virtual machines. And things started to get pretty complex. Now, the good news is they also got very sophisticated, which is good, especially from an operations perspective. It gave you the ability to maintain and manage all of those resources effectively. But from a developer perspective, trying to take your application and get it running across those complex environments could be very, very difficult. So what we see in the future, on the right-hand side here, is a change back. Instead of having all these different computers and all these different sets of resources, let's pool all of those resources into a single unit. Let's have one pool of memory and one pool of CPU and networking and all of those resources within the data center. Go ahead and hit it. And if we do that, then we end up with this sort of new form factor. Instead of thinking about individual virtual machines or individual containers, we can think about things at a larger scale. We can think about things at the data center scale. And that's where we start to get really excited, because that enables these new hyperscale businesses to be able to perform most effectively. Now, once you get to that new form factor, though, you need new software to be able to control it. It's not about just having an individual operating system that can manage each individual computer or each individual node within the cluster. Now it's about having an operating system that can actually manage that entire pool of resources. And that's where the data center operating system comes in. Mesosphere, the company, created DCOS years ago based off of open source technologies like Apache Mesos, Apache Marathon, et cetera. And that is really the technology that you need to take all of those resources, take 1,000 nodes in a cluster, and turn them into a single pool of resources that you can run any workload on top of. And if you do that, then you get the ability to create what we call these new modern distributed applications. And these are sort of the next wave of applications that you'll see in your data center. First of all, on the left-hand side, it's containers. Those containers have microservices inside of them. Everybody's heard about containers and microservices, I'm sure. Well, DCOS is the easiest way to get up and running with microservices in containers. I'll show you why in just a second. But in addition to the containers, we believe that these new modern applications also include other things. It's about including your big data workloads. It's about including your analytics in that same infrastructure. There's no need to create multiple different data centers now to be able to run these different frameworks. Let's take all of those workloads and put them together into a single data center. And that's what creates these new modern applications. Go ahead and hit the button. And if we do it right, we can create this purple box at the bottom, a purple box that we can all share, that's open source, that is developed by a community. And that then will enable your businesses to focus on developing the modern apps on top of the purple box. Going back to Satya's quote, this gives you a chance to actually add significant value to your business by focusing on developing your competitive weapon. What's in the purple box then is something that we all share. It becomes a commodity. And that's good for two reasons. One, it means you're getting the very best. It means we're all working together to invest in a single platform. And two, it means you can actually develop much more rapidly. Working together means that this software goes much quicker. It moves much quicker. You can take advantage of those innovations that come from around the community and around the ecosystem. So that's really what we're focused on here. Using DCOS as a platform for enabling modern applications, which is what is the foundation then of a transformation into DevOps. If we do it right, that also means that at the bottom, you can use any infrastructure that you'd like. Now, we're going to show you how easy it is to do this on top of Microsoft Azure. It's one of our preferred platforms. We're going to talk a lot about how that also relates to the Azure Container Service, which is a managed way to get DCOS. But that idea of workload portability, being able to focus on building your modern apps and then run them wherever it's appropriate, whether it's DCOS in a cloud, whether it's DCOS on-prem, whether it's DCOS in some kind of a hybrid environment. It really is up to you then where you want to run those workloads, because you have that reliable middleware in between that it enables you to have that workload portability. It's an important aspect of what makes DevOps successful. And if we do it right, there's one more benefit. We also will get an ecosystem of applications being built on top of DCOS that you can take advantage of, that will be available to you out of the box. So if you want to run a big data or IoT stack, you'll be able to get Spark and Cassandra and Kafka out of the box with a single click to install them into your data center. And we're going to show you how easy that is. So this isn't just about building a great piece of technology. It's about building a community, about building an ecosystem. And that's why we're so excited to be here and so excited to be partnered with Microsoft in this journey. All right. Now, what is inside DCOS? It's a lot of pieces. DCOS is not just one piece of open source software. What we've done is taken the best of a bunch of different pieces of software and combined them together into an easy to install package or distribution. So what's inside? What I'm going to do first is kind of go through the layers that you need in this modern data center, and then I'm going to show you which parts are inside DCOS. So,
and let me just run this real quick, because I'm just going to bump it through a few of these.
Hey, Bill, slides one more.
So, no. Okay. Hold on. Don't give him the big one yet. So these are the layers that we think about when we think about what goes into this modern data center stack. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not the definitive set of layers. There are a lot of different ways of mixing and matching these things inside of a data center. This is just one way to visualize it and one way that we think about it. So going from the bottom to the top, of course, it starts with machine and hardware provisioning. Then it goes up to sort of the resource management. How are you actually taking all of the resources of your cluster and pooling them together? Then it goes up to containerization and job scheduling. How are you actually getting your workloads onto that cluster? And then it ends at the top with the orchestration of your applications. So, like I said, high level just gives you a sense of all the different pieces that go into this. And, ta-da! So we take the middle piece of it, we take software that handles each of those responsibilities, and we bring it together into DCOS. And that's what we think makes a complete data center operating system. So, just to be super clear, DCOS is 100% open source. You can go to dcos.io and download and install DCOS in your favorite cloud or using your favorite Linux distribution in your on-prem environment. It's completely up to you. We have instructions for doing that. It's 100% open source. That also means we have not put any limitations on how you can use DCOS. So you can run DCOS on a Vagrant in your laptop. You can run DCOS for a 10,000 node cluster in production. This piece of software is designed to work in production for your data center. I'll also say it's about 30 different open source solutions that we've brought together into DCOS. And that's important because 5 or 6 years ago, when people would try to build that stack that I showed before, they would pick the individual pieces, they would have to install each one of them into the data center, they would have to make them work together, they would have to figure out how to debug them when there were problems between them. It was a real pain. With DCOS, you get a single distribution that you can install as a package, as a bundle, of those 30 different open source packages. You're getting the best of what's out there in open source today. Already tuned, already ready to go. Okay. And you're getting a gigantic community. We had more than 60 companies come and join us in the launch of DCOS, which happened about a month ago. Each of these companies is actively involved in the community, actively involved. Some of them are actually using DCOS, so we've got companies like Yelp and Verizon up there actually using DCOS. Some companies are building on top of DCOS. We have several different databases, several different networking companies. We have systems integrators like Capgemini and Accenture. We have a really diverse community. And now, the reason we're here is because we also want to extend the diversity out geographically. We want to invite more of the world to come in and start using DCOS, and we want to support local communities of people that are interested in this technology. So, that's why we're here. Help you guys, as the leaders within Japan, to understand what it is and understand how you can start to build a community around this technology. But you're not alone. There's a lot of companies that are involved in doing this with us.
Boom.
Okay, so I promise we're going to get to a demo very quick. Just bear with me. A couple more slides. So I like to talk about at least one example of a company that's seeing success using DCOS, because it'll help you maybe to understand what the value can be, something you can take back to your boss. If it's good enough for Autodesk, it's good enough for you. Autodesk was able to show some significant reduction in the number of nodes that they needed in their cluster just by using DCOS. How did they do that? Well, by bringing those different workloads together onto a single data center, onto a single cluster, they were able to get rid of a bunch of these specialized clusters that they had created that were seeing very low utilization. When you bring all of those workloads together, you can get a much better utilization rate out of your data center. So that's one important piece. The second important piece, which I'll point to, and it got cut off, I can't believe it. It's this one down here, it's really important. I'll tell you what it says. It says their total investment from an engineer perspective got dramatically reduced, down to one engineer to manage this cluster that they had, something that was taking a team before. So what does that mean? Well, of course it means cost savings. But more importantly to Autodesk, it meant that they could focus on innovation. Those engineers didn't have to pay attention to what was happening in that purple box. They didn't have to reinvent that wheel. They could do what Satya was talking about and focus on innovation and becoming more of a competitive weapon. And that's a really important point here. Of course, there's cost savings in using something like DCOS and going to a DevOps model, but there's also opportunity to be more competitive. And that's at least as important to companies like Autodesk. Okay. So, I'm going to point you later to dcos.io, where you'll be able to go and get more information about DCOS. You'll be able to download, install, and run DCOS in your cluster. But first, I'm going to let Stathi run us through a really kick-ass demo of how DCOS works and how you can actually take advantage of it today.
Great. Thanks, Aaron. So, even better than a demonstration is an actual walkthrough of setting up the demonstration that we did yesterday. So in sort of the spirit of DevOps, right, a big part of it is getting hands-on and enabling you to understand the technology more. So that's pretty much what we're going to do. We're going to show you the assets and where you can get a lot of the necessary collateral for setting up this environment. As soon as we get our connectivity going. Oh, what's the password? Anybody? What is it?
Open Microsoft.
Thank you. There we go. So one of the core asset repositories is this Twitter GitHub repo. So if you go under the Mesosphere account, you can search for Twitter. And basically what we're going to do is just walk through the instructions here for setting up the demonstration that I did yesterday and bypass some of the sizzle, right? We want to actually get to the steak, get to the heart of what we're actually installing, walking you through everything, including the setup of the Azure cluster, which will take a little bit of time, but that's okay. We'll see exactly all the commands that you need to do to get things set up. So I'm a command line guy, so I'm going to do everything from the command line, and there's a couple things. You can download the Azure command line utilities for whatever platform you're running on. And the first thing that you're going to want to do is actually create a resource group that we are going to install the cluster in, as well as all the infrastructure components in there. And this should probably fail because I didn't specify the.
log in again.
Oh, yeah. Show of hands for anyone that's used the command line utilities for Azure. Anybody? Kind of light. I would encourage you all to do that, either with me or even after the session.
And for those of the rest of us that just go through the marketplace, it's okay too. You can also get access to this through the marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah, we have templates actually that. So, I was also going to show the marketplace. It's a little bit easier, actually, yeah, because it'll just walk you through what you need to do through a nice little wizard versus using the command line facilities, obviously. I might still be having connectivity issues here, unfortunately.
Yeah.
This one? Everyone shut off your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop streaming video. Oh, what's that? Oh, okay.
Top secret Wi-Fi. Yeah. If only I had known.
There we go.
That's amazing.
Yeah. All right, let's try and get this back.
Hey!
All right, this step is slightly.
Stathy, was that the largest round of applause you've gotten all week?
That was. So a couple extra steps just to get the authentication going for the command line utilities. There we go.
Yes.
Oh, no, not wet. There we go. One more time.
Woohoo!
Right.
Come on, that gets a DevOps, 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 DevOps. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to work. Off of a template that I have here. Just make sure I'm pointing to the right template. So it's asking me to specify a prefix for the different host names. So we talked about the cluster a little bit. We have what's called master nodes and agent nodes. The master nodes actually manage aspects of deployment and lifecycle for the cluster, also handles HA. And the agent endpoints are responsible for executing the tasks. Actually, they're the workhorses of the cluster. So this could take a little bit of time. I was hoping to kind of kick this off initially. But in the meantime, I'll walk you through just a little bit of the repository, talk through some of the commands I'm going to use, and also just kind of highlight again. So the Azure Marketplace is a place you want to kind of kick off ACS. It's a little bit easier. It's a one-click install. You don't have as much configuration as if you were to use the template. The template's a very easy way to do either a customized version or the non-open source version as well. And obviously, we're going to use the dashboard quite a bit, walk you through just some of the components as things get created. and just some of the components. So what is the Tweeter application? It's a stateless application. What that means is it's not actually saving state to disk. It's going to use some external services for doing that, and the couple of external services that it's leveraging are Cassandra and Kafka. We're also using this analytics component called Zeppelin. It's just a nice little clean standalone utility for integrating with backend data services, making it easy for data scientists to run queries and whatnot and get nice visibility into the data that they're trying to tap into. So most of the stuff that we're going to be using is actually through the CLI, but I'm also going to show setting up these backend data services through the graphical interface. They're interchangeable, like I mentioned yesterday. You could do everything through the command line. You could even do a lot of stuff through the graphical interface. Depends on what you're comfortable with in the context, how you'd like to kind of define your workflow, what's most productive for you. There's a couple other components as well. So there's a Marathon LB component. What that is a edge load balancer that we use for making it easy to tap into the internal services. Because when we're using container-based technology and microservice-based technology, one thing about it is it's very dynamic, very flexible. So it can move around the different infrastructure systems within the containers, and it might even scale out as needed. So if you could imagine, what starts to get complex is how you might want to find that service, right? Where's the IP address? What port is it listening on? All of those things get a lot easier when you're able to dynamically sync that with an edge load balancer such as Marathon LB. We also have internal components, Mesos DNS. We also have a product or a component called Minuteman, which is kind of a networking fabric, if you will, so providing a very easy to use layer for service discovery within the cluster itself. All of this stuff, as Aaron had mentioned, might as well go to the docs page. You could either go to docs, or if you just go to DCOS.io, all of this stuff is actually very easily searched too via Google. So if there's certain terms that I use, as I mentioned, Minuteman, you could easily just search for that. You can easily browse the CLI utilities, whatever you might need. Service discovery and load balancing describes a little bit if you're not too familiar with that, and then you can drill down into the specific components as needed, including things like Marathon LB, what is it, how do you integrate with it, and whatnot.
Maybe click on the overview and show the sort of master and agent picture.
Is that architecture?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's architecture.
Yeah, so this is a pretty good diagram that extends off of the diagram that Aaron showed earlier, which is a bit high level, just talked about the rough services. This is actually describing sort of the master agent paradigm that I talked about and what that looks like. And the reality is you don't necessarily want to think about that too much unless you're administering or want to be a deep Mesos expert, because the reality is it's designed to be easily manageable, have high availability, and not have to worry once you have things set up, unless obviously if there's a critical failure and you need to recover from that or scale out the cluster as needed. But for the most part, once you have things up and running, runs by itself. So the Mesos agents are the workhorse, as I talked about. The Mesos master is going to determine where the frameworks may get executed, how tasks are going to get executed. It coordinates activity between the different frameworks. And the user space, we have our services and processes. Anything else you wanted to cover?
No, I thought that picture might help.
Yeah. So if we go to our cluster, we could probably see a certain degree of what's getting set up. So you'll see under this resource group, we have a bunch of things going underway. And it's not just the servers, but we have the front-end load balancers and basically the broader infrastructure components within the Azure context for delivering this cluster as needed, including security aspects and things of that nature. This will take roughly 10 to 15 minutes. So I'll just be clicking back here and waiting for that to complete. Does your presentation have sort of the overview of, well, I still have the other cluster. I could probably walk through that. I was wondering, I just wanted like the canned overview for DCOS. All right. I'm just going to go on and jump to this. So while that's kicking off, let me walk through this diagram really quick and explain in a little bit more detail what's going to get set up. So obviously within the cloud providers, we're deploying everything up in Azure, and at the kernel or the lowest level, we have the Mesos kernel, what we call the Mesos kernel. So when we talk about the concept of the data center operating system, if you think in general terms of an operating system, you have very low level functionality that you don't necessarily want to integrate with, right? There's more components and more functionality that's built around this lower level kernel. One big difference with our technology is the notion of a two-level scheduler. So the kernel provides the lowest level or the resource scheduling, and then the components you see up on top, we call those the application schedulers, right? And those determine how the lower level resources can get utilized. So if you remember from yesterday's presentation, we talked about how we have 10 systems and this notion of a fabric, being able to aggregate all of the individual systems into one single fabric. That's happening within the Mesos layer, right? And the technologies that get deployed on top and the application schedulers can determine across the disparate infrastructure systems which resources they may want to use, how it might want to do failover, how best the technologies should operate. So one of the things that we're going to leverage heavily is the Marathon component that you see at the top. That's our PaaS component. Really what that means is it's an interface for how the applications will get deployed and managed. Stateless applications, stateful applications, whatever it might be. Then we have other technologies that you see up there. We talked about Cassandra and Kafka. Those may have their own frameworks. And really what the framework is codifying the operation of that technology that it might want to integrate with. So it's a very powerful notion in that we are defining the known good state, not just of how this technology, not just how Cassandra or Kafka gets deployed, but the actual overall life cycle of that technology as it operates on the cluster. So it's really, really abstracting a lot of the complexity away from some of these more advanced technologies and greatly simplifying them, but not black boxing them off. You still will have a high degree of ability to configure and or tweak the settings as necessary for your specific needs.
Maybe one more thing on this slide real quick. So I think one of the interesting things about making a bet on an operating system like DCOS, it's similar to making a bet on something like Linux as an underlying technology. That bet is a bet that you're going to live with for a while. But the applications and frameworks that you run on top of that may change over time. And that's why I think it's so important to go with a technology like Mesos that's being used by companies like Apple and Uber and Twitter and Netflix. This is a technology that's being used very widely by very big companies. So making a bet on that technology is important. But the technologies above that are going to come and go. So believe it or not, Docker is only a few years old, right? So it's important to realize that you want the flexibility to be able to take advantage of new technologies when they come around. And making a bet on DCOS means that you'll have the ability to run those new technologies when they come around. And like I said, it's very analogous to Linux. Linux has been around for a long time. It's a foundation that you can count on. DCOS is the same way, and it will enable you to run whatever modern applications, whatever modern frameworks are developed over time.
Perfect. Thanks, Aaron. All right. So we got the output for the cluster and that it got created, and there's two URIs that we have here. And basically, there's one for the master URL, and then the other is for the agents, which we're only going to access with for when we actually jump to our application. So if you'll notice, I have a different spelling here, so the full decode. And then I'm going to use the shortened one. And what this should pull up is the authentication screen. And all this stuff can be configured. We have defaults, obviously. Sometimes when you're deploying, you may want to change that to be a little bit more robust than defaults. So here you'll see just an empty cluster, right? Yesterday you saw things a little bit differently. We had some usage already in place, and if I brought up the other dashboard, you would see that. But basically, it's just a raw cluster. We don't have anything deployed other than Marathon. So as I mentioned, that's the PaaS component. It's kind of like a watcher, actually, for some of the other frameworks that get deployed. And once we deploy Cassandra and Kafka, you'll see that from the Marathon view. So we started at a very high level, as we said, have 10 nodes, nothing being used, no CPU or anything. So then I'm going to go back to my repository here and just go ahead and run these commands after I install the command line utilities. Don't want to forget that. So if you've already set up the prereqs, you'll see a bunch of them here. And you want to do that first. Obviously, since I've already been using the command line utilities, I already have that. So all I want to do is go into my repository, just for tracking purposes, not necessary. Let's make sure I don't have an existing directory there. Then I'm just going to kick off the command. So what this is doing is just downloading some of the utilities for communicating and preceding the configuration for the CLI utilities. There we can connect up to the cluster. It's just using the same credentials that we used before. As long as I don't fat finger anything. There we go. So this is installing the CLI utilities for the specific frameworks, not actually the frameworks themselves. And this will be for Cassandra and Kafka. And as I mentioned yesterday, so the command line utilities, what's really powerful about them, some of the individual open source components like Mazels will have some CLI facilities. This is actually for the broad solution, if you will. So it's an overarching API layer, productivity layer that we incorporate, and it even extends beyond our technology. We're actually acting as a proxy to some of the underlying technologies that we work very closely with, such as Cassandra and Kafka. So from the single interface, you can manipulate and query and view some of the underlying technology that's been deployed. So it's really powerful from an operations perspective. So if we go back to the cluster view, could obviously have used the command line facilities. I'm going to go ahead and install Cassandra and Kafka using what we call the universe. So this is analogous, as I mentioned yesterday, to the marketplace. This is where our partner ecosystem can shine, really, help us develop, as well as the community, different packages that could be readily available for deployment to the cluster. So if we wanted to go ahead and do an advanced installation, we could do that, and this is where you could do some of the custom configuration that I talked about, right? Which is really powerful, because most people, out of the box, we're not going to be able to predict the perfect configuration for your environment, as well as all the different environments that you may be deploying to, whether it's production or pre-production or whatnot. But in this case, the demonstration, the default configuration will work just fine. So now that those have kicked off, those will take a little bit. You'll notice the CPU starting to kick up as those services get processed by the cluster. And eventually, the status will see the services getting deployed. And once they're healthy, they'll be online. And then we can actually deploy our application.
And for anyone that's tried to deploy Cassandra or Kafka across a data center like this, you'll recognize how really amazing that is. With one click to have it installed across your data center, you don't have to tell it which node you want it to run on. You don't have to manage at that level. You manage it just at the standpoint of, I want to install this framework into my data center. And with one click, it just works. It's just there and available for you and your applications. It's pretty amazing.
So in some cases, the status will come back unhealthy just because the cluster is being set up. And the internal health checks are actually noticing that there is something not quite right with the known good state of the cluster because it's not quite set up yet. So those could take a little bit of time. There's a couple other things that we'll need to configure within the application service itself. So one of those things, as I mentioned, the Marathon LB component. How do we know to have that integration connect to the appropriate front-facing load balancer? And we use this notion of labels. So let me go ahead to the deployment descriptor, which is what we use to feed to Marathon for allowing it to understand the known good state of that application. And it'll take things like those labels and use them to integrate to other services or components within the cluster. I think that was the right host name, wasn't it? Yep. So I see Kafka is deployed. I'm just going to break that open into a new window so we can go back to our cluster. So again, some of the power just of the dashboard, making it really easy to toggle back and forth between screens. Right, now that we have both of our services as being healthy, should get a positive response if we use the command line utility. So before you saw that there was an error, now we're actually seeing what the endpoints are. We could do the same thing with Cassandra. So we updated our label. The next thing we're going to do is go ahead and deploy Tweeter. And we'll see that's in the process of deploying. While that's doing that, let me go back to the deployment descriptor and we could talk through this a little bit. This is a pretty advanced one. Normally, it could be fairly simplified, and you notice a bunch of different things in here where we're defining the resource allocation that we want to provide for this application. There's also the number of instances that we want to use for the current running state of the application. And this can be changed on the fly, as most of these settings can. So from the GUI, we could show scaling up the application or scaling down. And as I mentioned, everything's interacting with or through an API. So you could easily integrate that for doing more advanced automation use cases. You also see the Docker notion. In this case, we are wrapping and packaging our application up in a Docker container. But what's an interesting distinction for our technology is, although we're using containers for doing the isolation, we don't actually require you to leverage a containerized application to deploy to the cluster. You could actually consume just standalone jar file or Python scripts, which is really powerful, because that way you don't necessarily have to disrupt or recreate your entire workflow, even though Docker is the standard for containerizing applications. So certain settings for the container, environment settings we want to pass in, as well as health checks. So this is pretty important. This tells Marathon how we know that this application or the application instance is running as expected. And we provide varying degrees of protocols that you can use to define a positive health check. We also can integrate with a command line facility as well. So it gets pretty powerful, pretty granular on how you'd want to define your health check. Talked a little bit about the labels, and then port definitions is just a way to either specify statically or dynamically how port mapping should occur. With the new component Minuteman, this will start to be less of a need to configure that. That's kind of, in the past, been an issue with containers in general, is just some of that complexity around figuring out how to identify the port, because the port setting would have to be dynamic, because we didn't have IP per containers. We're starting to get to the point where we do have IP per container support coming around, so that'll make it a little bit easier for getting around that port issue. So now we have our Tweeter app running. And if we take the other URL that we provided through the Marathon LB, just the decode A, that's the public agent, public facing agent, where the load balancer is. And this should pull up the Tweeter application. So one of the other things that I'm going to do is just go ahead and deploy post tweets. This is basically just an application that runs in the background. It's just going to stuff data into the back end. So when we look at our analytics, we have some sample tweets, because otherwise it's just going to be empty. And then lastly, I'm going to go ahead back to the dashboard and install Zeppelin.
Just like the rest of DCOS, the universe is open. So it's important to realize that this isn't sort of an app store that is controlled by one company or anything like that. We want to encourage other open source projects to come and get involved and put their packages into the universe. So you'll see we have dozens of packages there already that you can take advantage of, and we're adding more every day.
So while the application's getting deployed, I'm going to go ahead to the Zeppelin service. This too may take a little bit of time for it to deploy. So Almost there. While that's deploying, did you want to cover any other slides, or are you done? We could probably cut through those and then.
Yeah, sure. You can jump back to the slides. I'll just talk about the community for a second, because I want to encourage or talk to folks a little bit about how they can get involved.
Yeah,
thanks. So I put screenshots in here just in case everything went to disaster. We would at least have screenshots. But we don't need those, so that's great news. So there's three ways for you to get involved with DCOS, with our community. First and foremost, you can go straight to the code. It's all on GitHub. It's available for you to take a look at. You can create pull requests, of course. You can create issues. We really want your input at the lowest technical level, if you feel comfortable there. In the middle, we've created a public Slack channel where you can get instant access to the engineers and developers within Mesosphere and within our partner companies. It's a very active community. So if you go in there today, you'll see all kinds of posts, people asking questions, people looking for input and support. It's a very active and vibrant community. And last but not least, like every good open source project, we have a mailing list that you can use for seeing when new updates are available. You can also use that as a way of seeing what our roadmap looks like. If you have questions, longer form questions that don't make sense in Slack, you can also ask those using the mailing list. Now, these are all the things that we've set up globally for the project. But in addition, we're going to be hosting meetups and other user group events locally to help stimulate a local community around DCOS here in Tokyo. So if you're interested in that, I want you to reach out to me so that we can work with you to help create that community and to work to help support you in leading that community. I think, you know, we're active participants in the Mesos community as an example, because it's part of DCOS. That's another great example of a global community where they have local chapters, local user groups that get together, and they have an overarching global community that comes together actually next week in Denver for MesosCon. So plenty of opportunity for you to get involved, plenty of opportunity for you to learn. I also want to support you in creating Japanese content for your local market. So if you see what you like here today, if you'd like to go and try DCOS, write up a blog post that talks about your experience trying DCOS, send it to me. I'd love to see what your reaction is, what your thoughts are. I'd love to help you promote the work that you're doing around DCOS back into Japan and globally. So come get involved. We really want your participation in this ecosystem. And these are our contact information. So you can feel free to reach us directly. Don't be shy. We really want to be involved with you and to help you and support you. Okay, so that's all my community
Sweet.
Pitch.
All right.
You can jump back and wrap
Hopefully
up the demo.
Hopefully it's done. Yeah, we have about 5 minutes here.
So who's going to write a blog post? Who's going to try DCOS? Come on. Come on. Okay, much better. Okay, good. So I'm expecting about 80 blog posts out of this. Every single one of you is going to create content. Tell me how great or how much you got out of DCOS. I want to hear.
So it looks like our app's still maybe setting up. But Zeppelin did come online. It's possible with us injecting some data in there, we'll actually have the ability to do some analytics. So I'm just going to go ahead and kick that off. It's pretty basic. Just loading up some of the dependencies, doing some of the Spark streaming. This is all standard Zeppelin stuff. And then there you'll see at the bottom just some of the data that we've been dynamically feeding into the back-end database, right? We have the front-end service. Once that comes up, people are entering data in. That's what you just have to envision. And this is the back-end. The analytics person is doing their analysis on the data and their number crunching, whatever it might be. So lastly, when things go wrong. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can actually query the system. And again, a lot of this could be done from the command line, searching through the logs. But I think it's worth noting just how much of this is available for through the GUI, which is oftentimes a complex part of managing containers in general. So there's a plethora of information, including the IP and the port that different applications are running on. You can download just the standard in or standard out for those applications. Most production environments, you're going to integrate that directly with a log aggregation facility like Splunk or Sumo Logic or the like, as well as integrating with external monitoring systems. So sometimes doing this manual triage definitely won't be necessary. There's a lot of advanced tools out there to integrate with. But it's nice to know that you have these and that they are available. Talked about scaling out the application, right? So we had our default 3. If I wanted to go ahead and change that to 5, I could do that. We also have the ability to see the configuration and change some of this stuff on the fly, as I mentioned. All that stuff could be fed through the command line as well. And then we have a little bit more granular debugging if you needed to. So you'll see now that we're at 5, we spun up another 2 instances for this application, and they are both added to the pool that's being front-ended by the load balancer. So there was the Tweeter app as it would look like. And that's pretty much it for the demo. We got everything set up. I encourage you definitely to try that on your own.
So maybe I'll also point out one last thing in the final 2 minutes we have. So we've talked a lot this week about DevOps. DevOps. That's for you. DevOps. Okay, so we've talked a lot about DevOps. Now, sometimes people think that we put those two words together because we're trying to turn them into one function. Both developers and operations coming together. And actually, I don't believe that's true. I think what we're trying to do is create better interfaces between application developers and operators so that it's easier for them to work together and easier for them to each do their job most effectively so that the processes between them are mostly automated. So what you saw in this demo actually had those different interfaces. There was the interface for the operator who was busy creating DCOS within the cluster, managing the nodes, getting it running within Azure. Then there was the interface for the application developer, the Tweeter developer. He creates the JSON file. He's the one that gets it running inside Marathon. He can update that. He can scale it. He can manage it, right? So that's really the importance of what we've got here, the power of what we have here. Multiple interfaces for multiple jobs, working together, though, on a single common process for managing these really big-scale applications. And you even saw the Zeppelin interface for the data analytics. That's another role in the organization, right? Somebody who's going to crunch those numbers and turn them into actionable data. So using a platform like DCOS, you get the ability to have those relationships well-defined, and that's what's going to enable you to have a successful transition to DevOps because you're not having sort of the manual processes, the manual friction that happens in a typical IT organization. Does that make sense?
And with the increased collaboration. Yeah, and just also, we talked a lot about product and going just back to like DevOps philosophy as well. It's part of our philosophy, all the things that Aaron mentioned, is enabling the different practitioners within the IT. It's easy to think that everyone's going to be a software developer, everyone's going to be an operations person, but the reality is at scale, you're going to have a certain degree of specialized functionality and everyone's going to have certain workflows that they work better with. So
yeah, perfect. All right, with that, we're done. Thank you again. Thank you. We are going to go to the speaker area, follow-up, meet-up area place.
Handle questions.
On the other side? Yeah. So if you have any questions now, you can meet us there. Or reach out to us via email or Slack. We're happy to follow up there as well. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.